a BS in Family Social Science and a certificate in Alcohol and Drug Counseling from the University of Minnesota and a Master's in Arts in Nonprofit Management from North Park University. She has over 20 years' experience working in a variety of community systems, designing interventions to build healthy families. Let's welcome Amanda.
Thank you. Well, from kids to older adults. So today I'll be talking about our efforts with older adults called the Wisdom Tooth Project. And yes, the name does not refer to the third molar. So I have no financial or commercial interest to disclose, and I would like to thank our consultant on this project, who is Dr. Ruth Goldblatt. And this project has, the development of this particular program has been funded through grants from the DentaQuest Foundation and the Dental Trade Alliance Foundation. So our mission is to change lives by connecting communities with resources to increase access to care, education, and advocacy for all Americans, especially those most vulnerable. And the Wisdom Tooth encompasses all those particular pieces. In 2010, we wrote a white paper about what our next steps were going to be with older adults. We have done, you kind of stuck our toes in the water. In 2003, we published Data Decay. In 2009, we had a national symposium on older adults and oral health. And so when we developed a white paper, we came up with a multitude of strategies. And as we vetted it, the web portal idea came forward as the most exciting and the most supported one. And of course, the first thing is that, yes, build a portal, reach everyone, tell everyone. But that's a whole lot of people. And how do you do it? We were also told to quit talking to any more dentists and any more dental people. They said, you said you're preaching to the choir, you need to go outside of your comfort zone. And caring for older adults is an extremely interdisciplinary measure. So now our box is getting bigger. But we also got the advice, it's okay to draw your box small when you go out. So target your audience, you know, very carefully for this first iteration, and you can always expand. And the other feedback that we consistently get is if you're going to have the web portal, you got to change the name. So it can't be Wisdom Tooth, and we know that. I don't know what it's going to be yet. So during the same time as we're vetting it, Oral Health America annually does a survey of the general public with Harris Interactive. And we had asked a question on the survey, not necessarily anticipating what we were doing around older adults, but the question was, are you involved in making care decisions for oral health for another member of your family? And the answer came yes, and the question back was then was, to whom? And more than a third of the respondents said that they are making health decisions around oral health for an older adult in their life. And then there was further, you know, survey around kind of what they knew. And what we really found out that they didn't have a lot of knowledge about periodontal disease and tooth loss. So you know that there's a significant knowledge gap. So knowing how many people were involved in caregiving, and the national statistics, you know, tell us that anywhere from 40 to 60 million people are involved in caregiving of some sort, we really felt we needed to talk directly to caregivers themselves. So we arranged a focus group of caregivers. We did it in an online format, in a bulletin board form, over a three-day period. And they were pretty forthright in sharing with us what they knew and what they felt about oral health. So they acknowledge that it is really important for the loved ones in their life, but they feel pretty overwhelmed with all the other health considerations that are happening. They also knew that trying to talk to their loved ones about oral health was going to be a challenge because many of them still felt that the natural deterioration and condition of their mouth was simply a normal and accepted process of aging. When we asked them, you know, if you had questions, where would you go? They said they would first ask their dentist, but we also know the statistics about how often adults use their dentist, so really they probably aren't seeing, you know, when half the people don't have a regular dental visit in a year. So we know the dentists are going to be some of the information, but people are really going to be turning to the internet, and that's what they said. Their next stop was the internet for information. And they'd really be using it on an as-needed basis, and they'd be really looking for information around prevention and symptom-specific related information. We also asked about some messaging around older adults and caregivers and what kind of message would engage them to look and talk about oral health. We talked about things like your teeth are for life, and they thought that message was pretty flat. We also talked about the economic case of delaying preventative care costs more down the line to treat. That also didn't really resonate with them, though they did like the idea of prevention. But what they responded most to, and I was actually pretty excited to see this, is that they really liked the concept that oral health was part of the overall health of their loved one, that it could not be separated from the rest of their body. So okay, you educate caregivers, and then what? So we know family caregivers, once they figure out what they need to do, they're going to go out and get it. So how is a caregiver going to get care for their loved one when in a system that is already fragmented and uncoordinated for older adults? So the other thing that they told us specifically, that they needed local level resources. And of course they said they needed information about dentists and clinics who understand and see older adults, and that they needed education, great, at the national level. We can at least do the education part, and we actually have a good idea of some dentists and clinics from our national associations. But they needed information about transportation. They needed information about financing options in their community. They needed just general caregiver resources that are very, and all three of those things become very local and geographically specific. So as we go forward, how does a national organization connect people to local level resources? And how do we create a system of care when there is no formal system of care? And then, of course, we have a real practical aspect of, like, we're building a web portal, so what does that mean for the nuts and bolts? So one of my previous lives, I worked with an access to care network where we really engaged the non-Medicaid community to develop a system of care for people who are uninsured. And Dick Andress is who somebody I consider one of my mentors, but this is the slide that he always uses, and so I like to repeat it. So really all it takes is a common mindset. A conference is a place where people who are individually powerless go to decide they collectively that they can't do anything. And I think all of us have sat in more than one meeting where it becomes of the we can't, there's this, there's that. But a collaboration is a place where people who are individually powerless go to decide collectively that they can make a significant difference. So using these kind of pieces that we know, we figured out who our target audience is. We know it's the informal caregivers of older adults. We also know some older adults who have ability to seek information on their own. And many of those caregivers are baby boomers who are aging themselves. And so it becomes, you're looking for your mom, but really the messaging of prevention certainly isn't specific to their loved one. It applies to them. So we're hoping that we're educating them as we go. So we decided to structure the website on two levels. One, there is a national page, which really focuses on the education, the information that remains the same from community to community, and with a very specific focus on prevention and why it's important to continue to maintain your older health as you age, particularly in its relationship to other chronic conditions. But we also know that there needs to be a local level page. So to connect users to the access to care resources in their own communities. So these are some of the things that we have done in 2012. So we're already in the building process. And this next part helps us explain a little bit about the local and regional. So we talked about collaboration as being our focus in developing this particular resource. And at Oral Health America, we certainly don't own the knowledge, really, the clinical knowledge to for the educational section of the website. So we have two memorandum of understandings with both the American Dental Hygienists Association and Special Care Dentistry Association, where they're providing content for the website, and many of their members are also sitting on a scientific advisory committee, both to help us identify gaps in the information that we have and to vet the information, so we're making sure that the information is really reflective of accuracy, scientific accuracy, efficacy, and best practices. But if we can do this on the national level, can we also engage local level experts as well? Sure, why not? The other focus is, when you engage this local system or these local level experts, we're looking at it as a mosaic framework. Because there is no system of care for older adults in oral health. So can we help local communities develop a sort of informal system? And so there's three particular points, is that we focus on the assets a community has. We spend too much time talking about what we don't have, but let's talk about what we do have. We also look at it as a systems focus that, you know, every piece is interrelated and connected in some way, and that really it's going to require an interdisciplinary collaboration. And so by using this mosaic system of care, you're engaging people across different disciplines, and it also becomes a focus of that every door is the right door, that it isn't somebody else's problem. So we decided to take this approach and test it out in Connecticut as our first pilot area. And why we chose Connecticut, and I'm going to put it up right at the top, really the reason we chose Connecticut was because of Dr. Ruth Goldblatt. But we have kind of I don't want to say the backup information behind it, but really her particular enthusiasm and level of connection and relationships among people both in the oral health world and outside of oral health were really important for this particular project. But also looking at Connecticut as a whole, there are some very strong existing programs. They have some history of interdisciplinary stakeholders. They collaborate. They were open to this concept. They have some facilities and providers. And really, the other piece that I don't want to overlook is that they do have adult Medicaid benefits still that are relatively strong compared to other states. So as we approached the stakeholders with Dr. Goldblatt, who identified them, we asked them first, do you think a resource like this web portal would be useful in their community? Because if they didn't think it was useful, that was kind of the end of the deal. I mean, if we're not going to make something that isn't beneficial. And they came back to us resoundingly and said yes, that they had done some work before, they had identified some resources, and they didn't know where it should live. So from that point, we actually had an on-site meeting where we brought together these particular stakeholders. And these stakeholders were not just dentists and hygienists, who certainly were represented both as clinicians and in their associations, but pharmacists, physicians, assistants, nursing, people involved in senior centers, selectmen, transportation, veterans administration, areas on agent, areas, triple A's, so I get all my A's correct. So, and actually the majority of the people in that room were not oral health people. So bringing them all together, we asked, what are the needs and barriers in your community? Because that was going to come out anyway. We wanted them to identify what resources they were in the community, and then who or where is the best place for the keeper of this resource information? Because at the end of the day, we will need a local level person to continually be engaged with the community in updating this particular site. So, when we asked what are the top needs and barriers to oral health care for older adults in Connecticut, transportation, of course, is a primary one. They really felt that older adults needed a dental home, finances, health literacy, interdisciplinary education. So these are probably not surprises. We asked them to talk about identify some of the resources, and education was certainly very important. They wanted to make sure they could educate providers, that there was interdisciplinary education, and also reaching out to the community. And these are some of the things that they identified in their own community, things that were in progress or things that could be tapped. And then we asked what resources are available for older adults and their care advisors in the community, and what resources might be available in an ideal world. So they did some mapping. But what we found is that even though a lot of this group of people knew each other, when they started listing resources, they're like, oh, I didn't know about that. Oh, I didn't know about that. You know, how do I get that here? So even in a community where they had already done meeting before, the actual act of putting things down in writing certainly provided more sharing with each other. And it seems really basic, but, you know, sometimes you forget what you have and what you don't have, or what the other organization may have, you know, now this week that they may not have had last month. So right now for Connecticut, our next steps are going forward is that we have identified a local liaison and we're working on a partnership agreement. Part of identifying that local liaison is that they are going to have back-end access to the website to be able to do all their own uploading, so we have to provide them some training. And we should provide a stipend to them for that work, for doing that. And this is actually a very interesting question, because when we did some stakeholder groups, we did talk to people in the dental trade industry, and they said, oh, great, people will pay to do this. And I'm like, you don't know public health, do you? So we realized that the people at the local level need to have some ability to recoup and have some sense of what their time is worth to do this project. So we have moved on to the design phase, and we have two designs, and we just got those last week. So okay, stuck these in. So when we're looking at the designs, of course, we're looking for the ease of navigation, health, literacy issues. So that's one. And then here's the other. So you can kind of see. If you want to look more, I can send this to you. So what we've learned in working with Connecticut is that what was really important for us to develop that local level was really having the right convener. I truly don't believe we could have done this without Dr. Goldblatt. At the end of the day, relationships still rule the day, even with technology, that the personal connections and investment we have in each other are important, that you really need an interdisciplinary approach. Don't assume. We assumed that that everybody there knew what everybody else was already doing, and they had no. It was amazing how much they didn't know already about each other. And that from a national organization, that there has to be real support of local efforts, not just talk. There should really be some dollars and some effort behind it. So for any further questions, that's my contact information.
Thank you, Amanda. Are there any questions for Amanda? Jane?
Did you include United Way at all?
The question is, was the United Way included?
The United Way was invited, but they did not send a representative. But we've had some discussions with them, and now we leave that to the local person to continue that discussion. But they certainly were made aware.
Are there any other questions for Amanda or for our presenters that are still here, Claudia or Natasha? Oh, yes? Would you like to come up and ask the question into the microphone? We have to repeat it. Or I have to repeat it. What was the question?
Just wondering, how can you get more people interested in going to these websites? For example, when you look at the Easy Exploration websites, they get thousands and thousands of hits all the time, whereas the dental ones get relatively much fewer.
So,
any suggestions for how to improve that?
So the question is how to improve increase the number of people who use these websites. For positive information.
We have some experiences in building a website for dental professionals that nobody used. And so we learned a little bit from that particular experience. And this is not included in this presentation, but it is certainly part of our next year's work. And part of our effort is that we realize that in order for the website, you can't build it and expect people will come. So it actually needs to be marketed. And so part of our plan is to actually engage a professional marketing firm and launch a full consumer marketing in addition to our regular outreach to dental trades, which we'll do a specific rollout in February during midwinter in Chicago. So as we learned from the ad councils that the dental trades needs to be part of this process. We got some feedback that they weren't as involved as they would have liked to have been. But also in terms of we are going to be engaging people who really market to consumers and utilize their expertise. I think when Gary Price talked about the Oral Health Care Can't Wait campaign, he said for $50,000, we spent a little bit of money and got a little bit of change. And if you keep giving me a little bit of money, I'm going to get a little bit of change. So we understand that there's some dollars that have to go behind a real marketing push.
Right now, what they are doing with social media is you're posting links to kind of redirect people to the web pages. Social media is free. So when you are doing social marketing, sometimes when you have a firm, it costs. Social media is free. So a lot of people are just using social media to try to get people to the web pages.
The question is, how do you account for the variations in dental Medicaid?
So, and they're fluid because I was in a state that 6 months ago did have dental coverage and doesn't anymore for adults. And so we fully understand that these systems of care are patchworks, that real change has to come on a policy level. But until people start talking to each other about it and people understanding that dental isn't included in Medicare, that coverage that they may have had as an employee falls off, I mean, people don't necessarily have come to all those conclusions yet. So each community may have its own special set of resources even to work with adults without Medicaid. And so it's going to really have to be by community by community. And that's at least the best immediate answer. But at the end of the day, I don't think anybody's kidding ourselves to think that it isn't a policy change that really needs to happen for people to get good access to care.
So would your website have links for what's available in different states for seniors?
For the states that we haven't... We know when this rolls out, we're going to have one completed state and then other areas where there's not completed. So what we'll do is we'll at least incorporate links to the state dental societies, to HRSA, to free clinics that we are aware of in those states, at least so that there's at least something. It's very similar to what we do even on our national website where we have a need care button. And need care links you to me and spend a lot of time on the phone. So we have some knowledge of what might be available in the community, and sometimes it's just a little sleuthing, too.
Thank you. Jane?
I just was wondering about, I think it's great that you're doing it in Connecticut in a great way, but one up in everything of going to those caregiver sort of conferences within that state and then taking it to that next level, because I think that there's a lot going on.
And is there a question? Comment? Okay. Okay. So will you be working with caregiver networks in Connecticut?
Part of the stakeholders there were caregiver networks. We have also been talking to some of the national caregiving groups. We've all provided, at least in kind of the short term, we've done some writing for them for oral health for some of their publications. And so we're building those relationships. We also know that for some of them, oral health is really starting to really rise in terms of their awareness. So we think it's a really good time.
Are there any? Yes? So the question is, from a member of the audience, can dental therapists fill the gap for children? And is it addressed to Amanda or Natasha?
Anyone who's willing to answer.
Okay. Can you come up to the mic because it's being recorded? Thank you.
Myron Alukian, I'm a new member. The question is, can dental therapists fill the gap for children? Well, they do it in many other countries. For example, New Zealand uses dental therapists in the school system. 98% of those children get complete dental care, K through 12. In this country, I don't know what the exact number is, but I'd say it's easy to say at least 30 or 40, if not 50% of our children do not get complete dental care, very simply. And the major reason is an access problem in the United States is because of organized dentistry. They control and influence most state practice acts, and that keeps people from getting access to care because they limit who can provide the services. Want me to give a little lecture? The dean at Harvard several years ago, who died, his name is Paul Goldhaber. He used to say dentists are overtrained for what they do and undertrained for what they should be doing. You don't have to go to school 8 years to do a restoration or a filling. We have trained individuals, we've trained kids in 6 months to drill, fill, and extract teeth in Central America, and they're providing a great service to children in these rural communities that dentists will not go to and provide care. They get people out of pain. So dental therapists, now, it doesn't mean every dentist has to have a dental therapist. I would see dental therapists used where they're needed, where there's a need that's not being met. We're talking inner city rural areas. We're talking community health centers. We're talking about local and regional and county health department programs. In Boston, in Massachusetts, we have over 480,000 patient visits a year in health center dental programs, almost a half million. One-third of our dentists are foreign-trained because we can't get U.S.-trained dentists to work in those settings. And many of these foreign-trained dentists have graduate degrees in perio, endo, prosthetics, so they're much better than the average U.S.-trained dentist who's out of school 1 or 2 years. Well, the problem is how do you get to a child who's 2 years old, who's home, who has a single mother, who has three other kids and is trying to survive financially. It's not easy. If you can there are mobile programs or you can do home programs, but that ends up being very expensive. The ideal thing is to have a community health center linked with a school-based dental program, and they do outreach for people who can't get in. I tried to do that many years ago in Massachusetts, and the state licensing board clamped down on us. And then they tried to change the law. They were unsuccessful. But we were able to liberalize the State Practice Act. But it was a four-year battle, and it was organized dentistry against the public and public health people. We ended up winning. Any other questions while I'm here? Let me just say one thing. If it wasn't for Kathy Littori, we would not have had such a fantastic program. She kept on top of everyone. She got everyone to come in. She made sure all my forms were sent in because I neglected to do it by the time frame. But she kept the program together. Huge loss that she's no longer the program chair. But I'm sure she's going to provide her expertise to the incoming chair. But she's done a great job. Let's give her a round of applause.